Okay, let's talk about Hinduism today. For those out in CD land or tape land, or as you get this, we're going to be talking about Hinduism. I have a number of pictures. I'm going to try to go through this rather rapidly. Hinduism is a huge topic. Millions of people follow it, one of the third largest religion in the world. So it's no small religion, but it's primarily indigenous to India. I'm going to be showing the class a number of pictures. I'll try to describe the pictures as I show them to you. These front lights would be better off. The back lights, I don't mind being on. That's better. So, leave those off. That's good. So we'll go on and show some slides here. That's good from PowerPoint presentation. Let me pull out my notes so I go along with you here. Okay, here we see a slide just showing the introduction to Hinduism. You see some of the gods. This almost looks like Krishna trying to draw away somebody. Krishna was an appearance of one of the Hindu gods called Vishnu. Hinduism means Indianism. Indianism. It is a religion that's peculiar to India, although they have exported it under different titles, at least portions of it. There are 900 million Hindus. So that's a big religion. 900 million Hindus in the world. You have approximately 330 million gods to choose from. You believe in a caste system. Your goal is to join the world soul called Brahman. And an endless cycle of rebirths you will go through, going through the caste system in order to attain this release. You believe in karma, the law of the deeds. You ever hear the expression people say, do you have bad karma or good karma? Yes, sir.
What is the caste system?
I'll explain it. Anything I leave unexplained toward the end, please question me. But otherwise, I will explain as we go through. You believe in karma, the law of the deeds. You're heavily animistic and superstitious. And your main gods are a trinity. Even though you may serve 330 million because you're so happy, or 360 million, you're so happy, you want lots of gods. Your main gods are a trinity. Interesting, there's a trinity of gods known as Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Now that's the introduction to Hinduism. If you want to be a Hindu, those are some of the things you may want to consider. All right, Hinduism. Here you see a picture of Mohandas Gandhi, 1869 to 1948. He was a leader of India. He was the prime minister, and he practiced what they call ahimsa or ahimsa, which is fasting. So if things didn't go his way, he would just fast for days and days and days until he was so weak he almost died. And his friends, who didn't want to see him die, would then give in, find some compromise, or his enemies, because they didn't want to see his opposition. That was his way. And there's a movie out, Gandhi, if you've never seen it, G-H-A-N-D-I, Gandhi. It's a very good, it's a very realistic portrait of him and adds a lot of Hinduism, but it's a long movie, so I could not show it here in class. But Mohandas Gandhi was one who practiced his Hinduism in his politics as well. Here you see Ganesha, which is a god worshipped as an overcomer of obstacles. Ganesha has the head of an elephant, but has the body of a human being, and is supposed to be, let's see if this shows the laser, supposed to be the child of Shiva and Parvati, his wife or consort. So here you see little baby Ganesha. And this is Ganesha over here. It's interesting, I pulled off the internet just before I came, something that talks about him. It says he has large ears so he can listen more. He has a big head so he can think big. He has small eyes so he can concentrate. He has an axe in his hand. You see the axe over here. He has an axe in his hand to cut off all bonds of attachment. He has a rope to pull you closer to your goal. He has one tusk on this side. I don't see it as clearly, but one tusk that, retain good and throw away bad. And then he has a trunk, like an elephant does, which means he has high efficiency and adaptability. And then he has the rewards that he carries with him, and like some jewels or gifts. He also has blessings to give. Over in this area, he has blessings with him as well, and to protect. And he's got a large stomach. His large stomach means he eats a lot. No, it means he peacefully digests all, both the good and the bad. And then to some, one picture here, they have a little mouse down at the corner, and the mouse is desire. You're supposed to keep desire under. And then they also had food on the other side. This one doesn't show this. And it says the whole world is at your feet and for your asking. So that's their picture of a god. Now, Shiva is one of the gods, one of the three main ones. This was his son, worshipped as an overcomer of obstacles. It's not in your handout because I just pulled that down. Here's Shiva on Vishnu. Now, the three gods that they have, their three main gods are Brahma, who's like the creator, who's largely ignored. Who does that remind you of in Christianity's Trinity? The Father, largely ignored. So they largely ignore Brahma. In fact, there's no group that actually actively worships Brahma, even though he's one of the three. Brahma's forgotten. Then there's Vishnu, here pictured as this one down here under the foot of this individual. There's Vishnu. Vishnu is the preserver. The preserver. And then there's Shiva. Here you see on top of Vishnu. And guess who Shiva pictures? Satan. He's called the destroyer. He's the lord of the dance. He creates and he destroys at the same time. Now for the Hindus, they see the three of them working in harmony in this sense, that the world is constantly being created, preserved, and destroyed. Created, preserved, and destroyed. For them, it's a continual happening. Things are created, they are preserved, and they are destroyed. So that's how they worship. But most people worship Shiva out of fear. So keep him in mind. I see them as a type, not a type, of what the world has in Christianity, of God the Father, Jesus Christ, and Satan. And it's interesting how they picture Shiva on top. And in this picture, if I were to read you what it says about them, he's doing the dance and he has various symbolism. He has fire in one hand. He has a drum in the other hand. The drum is supposed to be what he creates things with. The fire is what he destroys things with, because they kind of mix him up as a creator too, I guess. But on the ground, Vishnu's supposed to be sleeping and dreaming up some of these things that you see behind. He's dreaming some of these dreams to bring into fruition some of the things that he maybe preserves or helps create. So, but yet, how is he pictured? Shiva's real big, and Shiva's on top of, get close to the speaker, Shiva's on top of Vishnu. What would Satan like to do? He would like to supplant Jesus Christ and God the Father. We'll see more about that as we go along. Here's one of Shiva. Krishna's dancing. I think that's Krishna. They both look a little bit feminine to me, but anyway, I think this is Krishna. Krishna is one who is an appearance, an avatar, as they call it, of Vishnu. So he comes and he dances, and there's stories about him, how he leads kids to safety, brings them back, and so on. He's supposed to be a good one. Of course, that's the one on which Hare Krishna is based. They just worship an avatar, an appearance of Vishnu, one of the Hindu gods. Here's another picture of some of the accoutrements, or you might say objects of worship or devotion. Interesting, a snake. Is this not working? That's not working. Let me grab the other one. I don't see the other one here. But anyway, this one, it works sometimes. And it doesn't work at others. It works and goes off. But this is a snake. And you see some of these other symbolisms. Some of them linger in the movie Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Remember, he was supposed to find this linga that somebody had taken away from them that lit up when he put it back into its proper place. And it was in the shape of a phallic symbol, which is the male sex organ. Okay. So they worship a lot of lingas. One is a snake here, and others are different objects that are supposed to be holy objects. They have 330 million gods to choose from to worship. The Hindu trinity, the Trimurti, is Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. The goal is to be released. It's called moksha. Moksha is to be released from this life. So if all you want to do is get out of this life, how are you going to treat yourself in this life? Put this self down. Get rid of this self. I don't want this self, because you want to be released. Prior to the soul's release, it undergoes a seemingly endless cycle of rebirths in order to go through the caste system. We'll talk about the caste system in a minute. But they have to. When you're born into this world, you're born into a certain social strata. Whatever that social strata is, that's where you remain throughout this lifetime. You don't go through this life. If you're the best you can be, for instance, if I'm born in the lower class, if I just perform whatever duties that are required of me in my lower class, caste, and there are four of them, maybe, picture me being in the caste system as this. Here's my soul. And if I really treat my soul nicely by doing good things, when I die, I hand my soul off to Chris. Now, if Chris treats it really nicely in his lifetime and he hands it off to Laura Beth, and Laura Beth treats it nicely, we might actually, when Jacob's born, he might even be born a new caste. He might be in the next caste. Now, it probably wouldn't happen that quickly, because they'd say it takes millions of births, millions of times, you know, going through. So it's an endless cycle. But if I treat it nicely, Chris treats it nicely, but he hands it off to Laura Beth, and Laura Beth lives a horrible life, and she now hands it off to Jacob. Jacob is worse than we were, because she's taken us backwards. So this endless cycle, yeah, shame on you. You ruined it for Jacob. But it's an endless cycle of rebirths. And people can progress, but not necessarily in this life. And each caste has certain requirements, or dharma, the righteousness of that particular caste, that they must do. And so we'll see that in a moment. But it goes through millions of years. This one book I have entitled Coming Back says, whatever you see when you die is what you'll become. So here I'm lying on the bed, and the last thing I look at is this flower that somebody sent, and I die. I come back as a flower. Now, that isn't what Hindus teach, but that's what this reincarnation spin-off group teaches. And they said there are like 8,300,000 species that you could come back as. Sometimes that's why some of them don't step on bugs. That's why they don't step, because you never know, there's Aunt Millie or whoever that is over there. That reincarnation is what is taught. And they say one-third of the world believes in reincarnation. I'll read some of those quotes to you as I have the opportunity. They're heavily animistic. We talked about that, and very superstitious. Karma is the law of the deeds. Karma is the law of the deeds. From good must come good, from evil, evil. This is one of your what am I questions. How do we agree with that or not agree with that? From good must come good, from evil, evil. So it's the law of the deeds. And you might say what you sow is what you're going to reap, right? So if I sow bananas, I'm going to get bananas, not going to get apples. If I sow oranges, I'm going to get oranges, not bananas. So what you sow is what you're going to reap. But if I sow evil, I'm going to get evil. If I sow good, I'm going to get good. That's the law of the deeds. That's why sometimes people say you have bad karma coming back to you, because, you know, he has bad karma around him. What he's done, he's reaping not so good things. This religion is primarily indigenous to India. Hinduism is called Indianism. It's about the religion of the Indians. But millions upon millions, can you imagine how many people have been Hindu? Multiple millions of people in the world. Here we see a picture of what they call the Shiva Trimurti, but that's Shiva in the front, and I'm not sure. I think it's Brahma on the left as you look at it, and Vishnu on the right. The other one is definitely supposed to be Shiva in the middle, and Brahma on the left, and Vishnu on the right. So you see, I'm showing a picture of the Trinity, the three-in-one God called the Trimurti, T-R-I-M-U-R-T-I. Here you see Shiva in the dance. He was called the Lord of the Dance, the God of the Dance. Now, is dancing wrong? No, but dancing can be used for wrong. Dancing can be used to be very seductive. Dancing can be used to be very erotic. Dancing can be used to be very sinful. And dancing can be used to be for, two people moving together in harmony with music. Nothing wrong with that. Okay. Some people say, hate music. Baptists would teach you dancing, hate dancing, because dancing is hugging set to music. So I show a picture of Shiva dancing with a partner. Here's another picture of Shiva's bloodthirsty associate, Kali. Now, if you remember the movie, if you've been to the movie, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, when they were watching them, they were crying out, Kali Ma, Kali Ma, K-A-L-I, because they were blood trying to give, and she's bloodthirsty. She requires blood sacrifice. And remember, they had this virgin. They were trying to, Kathleen Turner, I think it was, they were trying to kill her or whatever, put her down there, whatever the lady's name was, trying to kill her because they wanted to sacrifice her to the gods, to that particular aspect of God, their God. Two beliefs held in common by all. This is by all of the Hindus. They believe that the Vedas are valid and true. The Vedas are their writings, the books that they have, and there are a number of them. And what the Vedas are a group of books that have been brought to the Indians of the subcontinent or of the Asian Indians that's been brought to them by the Indo-Europeans. And what they brought is a worship of many gods, and the Vedas, which are their sacred books, contain prayers, ceremonies, rituals for both laymen and priests to tell them how to worship the gods. Okay, so the Vedas are considered their holy books, but all Hindus would consider that the Vedas are both valid and true. And the caste system. They believe in the caste system. That how you're born into this world indicates your station in life spiritually, too. Their main gods, Brahman. Now notice you're going to see three different Brahmins. One is Brahman. Brahman is the world soul, the three-in-one God, another name for the Trimurti. And enveloping all people when they come. Your goal is to join in with this world soul, whatever that means. So Brahman. There's also Brahma. Brahma is viewed as the creator, largely ignored in worship. Brahma, B-R-A-H-M-A. Brahman, B-R-A-H-M-A-N. And then when we see the caste system, the top caste are called Brahmins. The Brahmins, B-R-A-H-M-I-N-S, are the priestly class. They're the ones that get to do the more active worship. Vishnu is another one of the gods. We talked about him, the preserver, who's actively worshipped, particularly as one of his avatars or appearances known as Krishna. And then Shiva, the destroyer, is both worshipped and feared. Shiva would be much like the witchcraft of Africa, where they would be kind of make Shiva feel good, keep him away from you, worship him so he doesn't trouble you. The gods have consorts and attendants to their gods. I could bring in a book, big book of illustrating of it, and you'd just be awed at all the different gods and pictures and demonic looking faces that some of these individuals have. Here's the caste system that Jason asked about. First of all, this is the top caste going from top to bottom. Top caste are the Brahmins, B-R-A-H-M-I-N-S, Brahmins. They are holy men, they are gurus, they are shamans. They're the priestly class. Now, when I taught at Ambassador, we had some students who came out of India who were converted, and one of them was of the priestly class. They were Brahmins. I don't know what your mom, she a Brahmin? So, I bet your mom converted to Muslim, right? Yeah, so... Shaq's mom was converted to Muslim, but she was brought up in India as a Brahmin class. So the priestly class, they are the top class, but they have certain duties that they have to do that the others don't have to do. And then there are the Kshatriyas, is the second class below that. This is made up of more of the rulers and the warriors, you know, the governmental officials, those who are the generals, the captains, the colonels, the warriors, Kshatriyas. Then you have the Vaishyas. These are the merchants and the craftsmen. So if you want to call yourself a Vaishya, just buy a store. You know, save up enough money, buy a store, and everybody thinks you're a Vaishya. But it doesn't matter how you're born. It doesn't matter what you do in life. It's what you were born as, okay? Sorry, you don't change castes in the sign. In fact, if you intermingle the castes, you become an outcast, okay? And here are the Vaishyas. And then the last one, the lower one, are the Shudras, which are the commoners, who have almost no religious privileges. They're barely in the realm of possibility, okay? People are born into these castes, okay? What would you say then? Would God, their God, be a respecter of persons? Yep. How you were born, who you were born, where you were born, what you were born, would say whether or not you were a good or a decent person. Shudras, the commoners, with almost no religious privileges, the Shudras could not read the Vedas, could not have much to do with the temple worship at all. And then finally, the pariahs, or the outcasts of society. They mixed. They may be people who engage in professions that are not even considered good by the Hindus. So the pariahs. Individual souls must travel through the caste system through multiple reincarnations in order to finally achieve the release, moksha, to join the world soul. That's what you do. You live life to hand off this soul to somebody. I'm using a pen, by the way, for those out in listening to me on tape. I'm holding a pen and I'm saying, if I keep this pen really nice, at my, like it's my soul, and by the time when I die, give my soul, migrates to my student in the first row, and then if he does well his life, it'll migrate to the next one. And if we all treat this soul really good, live a good life, have good karma, then maybe after several lifetimes, it'll bump up to the next caste. Now, with this other group that I have, I think it's Krishna consciousness, transcendental meditation, they think you have to take a long time. You have to go through almost all these different species to finally get to the human. And once you get into human realm, then it's how you treat people and how you do in the human realm. But it's endless cycle of that you have to go through, and these castes, in order to finally get to the world soul. There are four progressive goals of the Hindus. One is dharma. These are specified duties of one's caste. Another, dharma might be the doctrine of that particular caste. D-H-A-R-M-A, different from karma. D-H-A-R-M-A, the duties. Artha is another goal. This is worldly concern. In other words, the goal of theirs is, how do I function in the world? How do I not get too much into the world? Because remember, I'm supposed to be minimizing my desires. So how can I advance in business if I'm minimizing my desires? If I desire too much to have a really good business, maybe I'm minimizing my I'm maximizing my desires instead of minimizing them. So they have worldly concern called artha. Another one, three, is kama, different from karma, K-A-M-A, which is the pursuit of love and pleasure, which seems almost an oxymoron. It seems paradoxical that you would pursue love and pleasure, which seems to be going after your desires, when you're supposed to be minimizing your desires. But there's a certain time when you have to pursue love and pleasure, and that has to do with getting married, being married, raising children, and you'll see that when we talk about the typical lifestyle that they would imagine for a Hindu. And number four is moksha, the final release. So these are four progressive goals. You have specified duties of your caste that you do. You have to know how to function in the world without getting too worldly. You have to know how to pursue love and pleasure without letting too much desire. And finally, your release after the end of multiple rebirths. Moksha. We'll see that the Buddhists call it nirvana, nirvana. They call it a blowing out, like blowing out a candle. Ah, finally released. So their goal is to finally be handed off, that soul finally is handed off to the world soul and joins the world soul. And what are you going to do there? I don't know. But you get absorbed into the world soul. Here's the ideal life cycle of a person, a man. First of all, you'd start out as a student learning about your religion. So you start learning about your religion. Secondly, you become a householder, you raise a family, and you provide for them. So in this case, artha becomes important because you have to know how to provide for your family, and also perhaps some love and pleasure because you have your wife and you have your children. Thirdly, you become a hermit, where you begin to isolate yourself from your family and you maybe pursue studies. You just do studying on your own, meditating and so on. So you begin to isolate. So after they've been a householder, they have to come to the place, well, bye, family. Hope you can handle things without me because I'm going. And then finally, a wandering beggar, where he gives up all attachments and lives from day to day, ultimately to become a saint. Now, those are that's the ideal life cycle of a Hindu man. Ideal. How many achieve this ideal? I have no idea. But can you imagine students going through life? First of all, you learn about your religion. Then you raise a family only to say goodbye to them. Bye. I'm off. I'm heading off to be on my own, by myself somewhere. But you still might get some support from family and friends even though you're by yourself. But finally, you become a wandering beggar. Now, we'll see in Buddhism, they retain some of these even though Buddha rejected a lot of Hinduism. Buddha was a Hindu, but he rejected a lot of Hinduism. One thing he did not reject was the wandering beggar, because you'll see that the monks have to be supported by others. And they actually go out every day with their begging. They call them begging bowls. So they go out to beg for their supper, for their food, or for their lunch, or whatever. So they live from day to day, ultimately become a saint. Sacred books of the Hindus, they have the Vedas, talked about those before, that's what all Hindus must believe. They contain prayers and ceremonies for the priests and how to worship the gods. The Rig Veda, R-I-G, Veda, V-E-D-A, is the oldest and most important of the writings. It has 1,200 hymns in it. The Bhagavad Gita, and I brought a book along. The Song of God, it's called, is translated by Swami Prabhavananda, and it's about, nobody's ever checked this out, by the way. Add it to nobody's. I can't blame them. I've not even checked it out. So, the Song of God, it's the Bhagavad Gita. It's supposed to teach some lessons. It's part of a larger Mahabharata, which contains over 100,000 stanzas, one of the world's longest poems. And people read that as an epic poem. People read that more than they read the Vedas, because it's better reading and easier reading. And number four, the Upanishads. These are sacred books, remember. The Upanishads are commentaries on the Vedas. So this is what helped explain what the Vedas are all about. And the Vedas, just from my book, let me share with you, the Vedas have a section that has to do with ritual, that has a section dealing with sacrificial formulas to be chanted by the priests, and it also has a section on magic spells and incantations in verse. So, you know, sometimes these people go and they go, oh, I'm so wonderful, I can sit cross-legged. And by the way, they do show certain cross-legged positions of yoga, which means the time of meditation. Yoga exercises for meditation about their gods. And they give them a mantra to say. You ever hear no people? Probably no individuals. They're given a mantra. They repeat this mantra, this saying in Hindu or Hindi language, and repeat it. They don't even know what they're saying. They just say this over and over and over again. And they could be casting spells on people. They could be saying all types of things that are not right and not proper for a Christian to do. All right, so just so you're aware, just trying to give you a little bit of heads up on some of these. Smriti, S-M-R-I-T-I, is a term meaning things remembered. And the one thing that they would try to remember were stories from the Gita. That most Hindus would make some stories from the Gita a part of what they would remember, or smriti. Dharma, remember we talked about the difference between dharma and karma. What's the what is karma? Who remembers? What's karma mean? Anybody? Law of the deeds. From good comes good, from evil comes evil. And what is the difference? What's dharma? Duties. Duties, doctrine. The duties of a particular caste. Okay. Now, the ways to obtain salvation, and these are interesting. You might think about it, which one you emphasize. There are three ways to obtain salvation. First of all, jnana, J-N-A-N-A, and this means through knowledge. Jnana. They learn, and some people are much better at studying than they are at praying. Some people would rather study than pray. Some people would rather pray than study. You should do both. But they say, you know, if you're just into knowledge, that's one way to obtain salvation. Studying about your faith, learning about your faith, knowing about your faith. Second one is karma. This step is through obedience to the caste rules and deeds. Karma, again. Doing good, the deeds that you do, karma. Some people are more active. I try to be more active. That's me. Karma's me. I like to get things done. Ask me would I rather play ball or read a book? I'd rather play ball. Would I rather go dancing than watch a movie? I'd rather go dancing. I'd rather do things that are more active than inactive, okay? But some people would rather do the inactive. That doesn't make me better than them. It just makes, that's the way I would do it. I try to practice my religion more than I try to talk it in private. I'm public now trying to teach you, so I'm trying to teach it. So karma, the step, this again, obedience. And then the third one is bhakti, through devotion and worshipful actions. Through devotion and worshipful action. So some people, and in their case, they would have dance and singing and dancing and doing things to their God. And you might say it's service. In some cases, people might be very service-oriented toward others, whatever they could do to help others. And of course, and then a church may be doing special music, performing special music, brings them some highs in their lives. So those are three ways to obtain personal salvation. You might ask yourself, which one are you strong on? Are you strong on one or the other? One of the three, or two out of the three, or which one tends to be more you? Because I see them as three different ways for people to reach out. Bhakti, B-H-A-K-T-I. All right, and then again, ways to obtain personal salvation. The goal is ultimately to be purified by doing good and rise through the castes in order to be released from this life to join Brahman, remember, the world soul, through multiple lifetimes. Karma are deeds that you do in this life, whether good or bad, and this influences the afterlife. So if I have bad karma and I hand off my soul to Chris, he's going to start off negative. He's going to be worse than I was. But if I have good karma, he's on the road to getting better. Okay. So I hand my soul off, reincarnation. It joins another body after death. The sacred, this is interesting too. Hindus have what they call the sacred. The Vedas are sacred books, like our scriptures are. The Vedas. How many of the Hindus read the Vedas? Probably not very many. They go to a guru or a teacher who's going to teach them about it through some means to make it more palatable. Most of them are not going to sit down and read the Vedas. But they think they're holy. The Ganges River, as a means of cleansing their sins. Holy water is taken from the river to friends and relatives. Holy water. Does that sound familiar? Yeah. Catholics have holy water. Orthodox, that Greek Orthodox, have holy water. Do Lutherans have holy water? Some have. Anyway, they have holy water. You know, Catholics will come and bless your home. They'll sprinkle holy water around your home. Conrad?
Do you know how holy water is made?
What's that?
Holy water. Do you know how it's made?
No.
You put the water in a kettle and boil the hell out of it.
Oh, did you hear that? Water in a kettle and boil the hell out of the water. And if you boil the hell out of it, it will be holy. Okay. Strike that from the CD. I don't want that going on. Okay. You know what we mean by hell here. We're not saying bad words. We're saying the literal place of hell. All right. Ganges, holy river to them. If you dip yourself in that river, that's considered to make you holy. Benares. B-A-N-A-R-A-S, Benares, which is a city on the Ganges, is considered to be a very holy city to the Hindus. So visiting that would be like visiting, for the Muslims, visiting Mecca. And holy cow. How many of you heard holy cow? People say, oh, holy cow. Well, you know where holy cow comes from? Hindus. Hindus have holy cows. Did you know that? References in the sacred writings about cows as being what we want to become. See, if somebody calls you a fat cow in Hinduism, that would be great. Thank you. Cow is what they want to be like. A cow is non-aggressive. You know, you see a cow standing in its field. You know, you try to form a love, a relationship with a cow. I tried. Bessie, as I called her. I didn't know what his name was. Didn't have a name. I just called her. She'd come every once in a while, look at me. No excitement in her eye to see me. But because I'd pick some grass from my side of the fence and give it to her, she'd chew it down, you know, and look and stand there. There was no emotion. They're so non-aggressive. I'm not talking about bulls. I'm talking about cows, okay? Very non-aggressive. And that's what they look to. And in India, old cows cannot be killed. They just roam the streets. And you better not kill them. You'll be in bad shape as a person. You'll be outcast and sternly rebuked and you know, disciplined severely. Tanners are the lowest form of life. And yet many tanners are Indians. I knew in Toronto, Canada, one of the guys that came to our church was a tanner. Probably the reason he came to our church, because they wouldn't have him in their church. The Hindus wouldn't. He worked in a tannery, leather, preparing leather. Because you're dealing with what? Hides of animals, and particularly of cows. Butchers are usually Muslims. So in India, the butchers are the Muslims, because they can butcher the animals. But the Hindus can't. In many Indian states, killing a cow is a capital offense. You could be killed for killing a cow. And what's really sickening, to really make you holy, you could take cow urine and rub it all over your body, or you could take cow dung and mat it in your hair. That means you are more holy. Now, nobody wants to be around you when you do that, by the way. Andrew? Say, eat it and drink it. Isn't that disgusting? It is so disgusting. Enough said. Stephanie, did you want to say more? Did you want to cause me more regurgitation? I'm already trying to swallow. Okay. It was a nice lunch. It was a nice lunch. Excuse me for a minute. No, okay, all right. Okay, cow dung and urine, and they do. They literally mat their hair, put oil, and in your case, you said they were actually waiting in line to drink it.
They thought that there was people that were really sick.
They thought. That apparently some people in the newspaper, my mom in Pennsylvania, read that urine's actually good for you, so if you drink your urine, you might get better. And I said, Mom, don't go that way. Don't go that direction. You know, when you're old, you're looking for cures of all things, arthritis and all, because it has a lot of... What do you think it is? It's waste. It's what your body did not process. So, yeah, you might get some nutrients out of it, because your body doesn't pick up every single nutrient out of it. You might get some. But it's waste, folks. It's waste. And they consider it holy. Objects in connection with the lingas. Remember, we showed those already, with the gods, rather, the linga, L-I-N-G-A. Okay, avatars of Vishnu. This is the last one, and we'll try to give you a break, and then we'll come back and we'll do the what am I. So we'll turn off our recording, and I'll let you break up into groups, and we'll give you about 15 minutes to prepare and then write up a paper, and I'll just have you turn the paper in, rather than having to download it otherwise, but I'll just have you, and other times we'll have you actually come up and present, but I'm trying to catch up a little bit here with Hinduism. Avatars. Avatar is an appearance of Vishnu. Vishnu is the one who appears in different forms. So, this comes from Paths of Faith by Hutchinson. Some of the avatars of Vishnu: a fish, a tortoise, a boar, a man-lion, a dwarf, a Rama with an axe, another one, Rama, the hero of Ramayana, which is in the Bhagavad Gita, and also Krishna. So Vishnu has appeared, incarnated himself, or come as an appearance in these various forms. Notice number 9, Buddha. You know how Hindus counter Buddhism? Well, they say Buddha came as an appearance of Vishnu to deceive and delude the wicked into following him. So that's how they account for Buddha, who was a Hindu who converted, started his own religion. You're going to love Buddhism as far as just understanding. I like Buddha a lot because what he was and what he became, what he learned. Okay. Anyway, they say he was sent to delude the wicked and to ensure their damnation. Number 10 is really interesting. This comes from Paths of Faith. Kalkin, K-A-L-K-I-N. Here's how they describe Kalkin. He is the appearance of Vishnu yet to come. And they say, he will be a warrior mounted on a white horse with a flaming sword. Now, who do you know who's coming back on a white horse, and he's going to establish a beautiful kingdom or whatever? Who do you think that is? Now, again, Satan the devil was so clever in my book at trying to confuse people with truth and error. Why does he have a 3-in-1 God? Well, we're not talking about truth there, but we're talking about how the Christian world is picturing it. Where did it get its picture? But even in that, how do they picture the Father? Father is kind of off or way. How do they picture Christ? Well, under the foot of Shiva, the destroyer. And who is the destroyer in the Bible? Satan the devil is the destroyer. And so you have all these nuances, all these threads that come through, and yet you have some good things, like from good comes good and evil, evil. You know, whatever you sow, you're going to reap. That's a true principle. And then Kalkin, yet to come. There will be a warrior mounted on a white horse with a flaming sword. These come from Paths of Faith, Hutchinson. And into worship, I'm going to talk about worship real quickly. The worship of the gods is central to their religion. Most of it's done personally. Gurus are available to teach. Some people pray for 3 times a day. Rituals revolve around births, church membership, marriage, and death. What do we call that? Rites of passage. Things that happen to you in life, high points or low points, happen to you in life. To worship involves washing, dressing, adorning, perfuming, feeding, or giving a garland to a god, flames of fire, music, and meditation. So any of those, they can be used in worship. Paste on the face. Have you ever seen paste on people's faces? If the paste on the forehead is horizontal, that's for Shiva. I always remember if I look at somebody and say, no, what is he a worshiper of? Because he's got paste on his face. If it's in the shape of a V, it's for Vishnu. V for Vishnu. V for Vishnu. If it's in horizontal, if it's this way, vertical, V, doesn't have to be in a V, but if it's vertical, it's for Vishnu. If it's horizontal, it's for Shiva. Most worship is personal rather than public. So most of them do it in their own time, in their own way, and at home. Shiva is worshipped out of fear, Vishnu usually joyfully, and Brahma is usually neglected. Okay, we'll come back and we'll do the what am I, so I'll stop here. Take your break, come back at 25 till, and get into groups. And we have six different ones to go through, and please do not refer to my answers on your sheet, because I already gave you those. So stop with that. I'll tell you which ones you have. You should have a plain sheet on this. We have reincarnation. We have the caste system. We have the Vedas. Reincarnation. Caste system. Maybe we could turn that down a little bit. Vedas. No founder, no creed. They had no individual who founded them. They have holy, and they have holy objects. Okay, I need five individuals who are willing to be the lead person, and you can decide where you want to get together, in one corner of the room, another corner of the room, the kitchen at a table, the library, wherever you want to get together and discuss this. When you come back at 25 till, get in your groups, and I'll give you until about 10 till, that's 15 minutes, to discuss the issue, to say, do we agree with it or disagree with it? If we agree with it, why? Or do we agree with it somewhat and disagree with it mostly? Do we disagree with it totally? And why? What scriptures would I give to try to refute that particular point? Okay? I think we covered all of them except no founder, no creed. They had no founder, no creed. The Indo-Europeans came and brought that religion, which the Indians, the Hindus, adapted by adding their own traditions. Who wants to do reincarnation? Do I have any hands? Volunteers count a lot. Any? Okay, Mary? Look for Mary, wherever she's going to be. Okay, Jason's going to do the cast. Vedas? Ashley, thank you. No founder, no creed. Mitch. And holy objects. Shaq. Okay, take your break and get together. If you want to go with them, but I'm sorry. What is it? Why didn't I have that on here? I don't know what I did. We have another one. Karma. Who wants to do karma? Chris. Able to start going through because some subjects are overlapping. Some scriptures you will use to maybe disprove the immortality of the soul come second semester, so you'll start getting familiar. You might use some of those same ones when you talk about reincarnation, which is really the immortality of the soul, or if we did some on the Trinity, which we aren't doing this time, but you'll get opportunities to do that as we go along. All right, what I'm going to do now, just briefly, go through these with you. I want to share with you one thing from that I found in this book on worship and the world's religion. I knew I had it. It says, how do Hindus worship? Again, this is personal worship. He then binds up the tuft of his hair on, let's go back one section. Worship is largely an individual matter. The twice-born Hindus, that is, those who belong to the three higher castes, perform their ritual three times a day. The devout Hindu rises before dawn, utters a mantra, repeats the name of his god, remembers his teacher, and says a prayer of identification with the Lord, which begins, I am the Lord, in no ways different from him, the Brahman. Brahman is world soul. He then binds up the tuft of hair on his head, which is a distinctive mark of a Hindu. He repeats a mantra. He proceeds to worship bare to the waist, barefooted, with a sacred white thread across his trunk from shoulder to waist, perhaps with marks of ash or sandalwood paste on his forehead, horizontal for Shiva and vertical for Vishnu, V for Vishnu. He sits on a rug on the ground, cross-legged. His eyes are fixed at the tip of his nose, which would make you cross-eyed. But anyway, he looks at the tip of his nose, controlling his breath, facing east. Water is sipped while the name of God is repeated. Water is sprinkled around the seat. He then touches six parts of his body symbolically to place the deity in his body. He repeats prayers, meditates on the sun, says another prayer mantra many times. Water is then offered to the image of his God. Some Vedic verses from the Veda are repeated, and a final water offering and bowing is made. Evening devotions are similar but shorter, with a recitation of verses, offering of lights and flowers to God. Midday worship follows a visit to a spiritual teacher and consists of worship towards and meditation on the deity. Five daily obligations, which an Orthodox Hindu observes, are offerings to God, to the gods, the forefathers, to the seers, through the reading of the Vedas, and to animals and to the poor. And worship is performed in a special room or a corner where there is also an image or a symbol or perhaps a linga of Shiva. So remember the story where they had to restore that linga to that particular temple. So that gives you an idea of the worship that they do. All right, and then let me just quickly comment on coming back. Several things in here. Talks about 8,400,000 species. Pages 15 and 16. Talks about if the soul is not slain when the body is slain, then what becomes of it? The answer is that the soul enters another body. This is reincarnation. And the Gita says, as a person puts on new garments, giving up old ones, the soul similarly accepts new material bodies, giving up the old ones. By the way, it should be recorded, this section. Are we recording this? Yes, good. Thus the soul, by the way, for those who are listening in, our students just did the What Am I's, which you're going to hear now, together collaborated on trying to come up with answers and how they would answer people coming from another faith, such as Hinduism, with these ideas of reincarnation and so on, caste system. So I'll go over those with you in a moment. Thus the soul remains entrapped in an endless cycle of births and deaths. So the soul similarly accepts new material bodies, giving up old and useless ones. So the soul just keeps on migrating. One who has taken his birth is sure to die, and after death, one is sure to take birth again. That's the quote from the Bhagavad Gita. According to the Vedas, there are 8,400,000 species of life, beginning with microbes, rising through fish, plants, insects, reptiles, birds, animals, to humans and demigods. According to their desires, the living entities perpetually take birth in these species. The mind is the mechanism that directs these transmigrations, propelling the soul to newer and newer bodies. The Gita explains, whatever the state of being one remembers when he quits the body, that state he will retain without fail in his next life. So if you're meditating on a rose as you die, you become a rose, according to him. Okay? Now, once you've reached human life, then you go through the caste system if you were in so disposed. Let me see if there's anything else I'm going to share with you out of this. Talks about sex change. It talks about progression. Pages 126 to 130 talks about how to be free. Talks about saying your Hare Krishnas. Should regularly study. Should eat only spiritualized vegetarian foods. And then finally, the positive principle of offering vegetarian foods to Krishna includes the negative principle of avoiding meat, fish, and eggs. Eating meat means participating in the business of unnecessarily killing other living beings. So that's the key. You want to make it? Those are four major keys to help you. Enough on that. Okay, let's go to the what am I. So the group that did reincarnation were Mary, come tomorrow, you can put in my box, or the next day, that before next Thursday, certainly. You can just put in the box whatever the summary of your group, how they felt about reincarnation. Okay, here we go. Endless cycle of reincarnation. How would I answer this? I would say I disagree with this. Ezekiel 18, verses 4 and 20 tell us, the soul that sins, it'll die. The soul. So the Bible, if you come to me telling me your Bible goes on, or your book says it goes on, or your belief, I'm telling you the Bible says you'll die. The soul that sins, it will die. Hebrews 9:27 tells us, is appointed unto all men once to die. But then it talks about after that, the judgment. Not after they die once and die again and die on and on and on. But rather, there's appointed to all men once to die, not the soul to die in a body many, 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 many times. Psalm 6:5 talks about you knowing nothing. Psalm 6 and verse 5, let me get that for you. In Psalms 146 and verse 4, those are two great scriptures to remember regarding the immortality of the soul. For in death there is no remembrance of you, and in the grave who shall give you thanks? So when you die, you're dead. Your soul does not go on, you're dead. Your mind does not go on, you're dead. You don't send something along. The only thing you send back are memories. Send along are memories of you. And Psalms 146 verse 4 similarly talks about this. Psalms 146 and verse 4. His breath goes forth, he returns to his earth, in that very day his thoughts perish. So nothing in the Bible indicates you're going to go on and on and on. Or certainly that you return in somebody else's body. That the real you is a... The whole idea of the immortality of the soul stems from an idea of something immortal living inside of you. That your body is really the clothing of this immortal thing called the soul. But the reality of that is there is a thing that happens where people do have something immortal living within them, and they are really like the clothing of that, and that would be demon possession, where an immortal spirit takes over them and is inside them and controls them. And when they die, that immortal soul, spirit, goes on, leaves them, and goes looking for someone else. That is the reality of that particular issue. Okay, let's go to the second one, the caste system. Caste system, Jason. Now, you may have gone even more deeply into it than I did. You may have more scriptures. That's fine. I'm just giving you an overview of how I would answer it. The caste system, Jason was doing this one, the caste system. Pro, there is a principle of being separate. Come out and be you separate. There is a principle. So 2 Corinthians 6, verses 14 to 17 tells us we shouldn't just be like everybody else. So if you want to say, is there any way we could see being the caste system would be, have any merit, 2 Corinthians 6:14 says, be not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. So there's a system of the unbeliever, there's the believer, unbeliever and believer. They're saying there's the outcasts and they're the four in the castes. Okay? For be you not unequally yoked together with unbelievers, for what fellowship has righteousness with unrighteousness, what communion has light with darkness? So there is a sense of separateness. Okay? Not to the extent of the caste system, but there's a sense of being separate, right? So that's a principle. But the con to this is God is not a respecter of persons. God is not a respecter of persons. He doesn't say, because you were born in the poor class, you have no access to me. Because you were born a lower class, you cannot do the same duties that anyone else can within the church. Acts 10 and verse 34, we went through that just recently as we went through the book of James. But in Acts 10 and verse 34, we find this: when salvation was granted to the Gentiles, then Peter opened his mouth and said, of a truth, I perceive that God is no respecter of persons. So God will forgive anybody, doesn't matter what they look like, what caste they are in. And in Galatians chapter 3, verses 27 and 28. Galatians chapter 3, verses 27 and 28. He tells us this, that there's neither Jew nor Gentile. He says, for as many of you as have been baptized into Christ Jesus have put on Christ. There is neither Jew nor Greek. There is neither bond nor free. There is neither male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. So God does not make a difference because of what you are. So he does not make a difference. All right, the Vedas. The Vedas are holy. Ashley was doing this one. And are the Vedas holy? What would I say? Romans 7 and verse 12. God's law is holy. Romans 7 and verse 12. We read this. Wherefore the law is holy, and the commandment holy, and just, and good. My question to them would be, who made your Vedas holy? Who made them holy? Which gods, which one of the 330 million made them holy? Number one. I know who made my law holy. It's my God. God makes things holy. Romans 7:12. John 17:17 tells us that God's word is the truth. John 17:17, not the Vedas. Thy word is truth. One internet article I was reading was trying to say that Christ went and studied under the gurus of India to learn his way when he was a little boy. Of course, it's total fabrication. John 17:17, sanctify them through your word, because your word is truth. So I would say, where's truth found? What is holy? God's word, God's law. The true word was then preserved through the Jews and the Greeks, not the Indians. How do I know that? And the guy's coming to me. He's starting to come to the faith. He wants me to show him why I believe what we believe and why we teach what we teach. And I say, well, look, Romans 3, verse 1 tells us by whom he preserved the word of truth. Romans 3 and verse 1. What advantage has the Jew? Or what profit is there of the physical circumcision? Paul's answer, much in every way. Chiefly, mainly, because to them were committed the oracles of God. The oracles, the teachings, the pronouncements, the revelations of God. So who was to preserve the teachings of God? The Jews in the Old Testament. And then in the New Testament, you go back to Romans 1 and verse 16, because God says this, for I am not ashamed, or through the pen of the Apostle Paul, for I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ. It's the power of God to salvation to everyone that believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. So Jews would not accept Jesus Christ, hence they would not preserve the New Testament. So Jews and Greeks had the responsibility of preserving the entirety of the truth of God, not Indians. Did not give that responsibility to the Indians, but he did give it to the Jews, and he did give it to the Greeks to preserve. No founder, no creed. Arians brought their beliefs to India. That's why they have no founder, no creed. Matthew 16:18. True religion has a founder, Jesus Christ. Matthew 16:18. I'll build my church. Matthew 4:4 would be our creed. What creed do we live by? Man shall not live by bread alone, but every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. That's our creed, true creed. And Ephesians 2:20, the church is founded upon the apostles and prophets also. Number five, holy objects, honoring. By the way, pro, there are holy things in the Bible. There's a holy hill, there's holy cities, there are holy children, and there are holy brethren. You have those in your hand up. The con, Exodus 20, verse 3, do not worship those holy things. Do not worship them. Romans 1:23 shows how they changed the worship of God into the worship of things. And then number six, karma, the law of deeds. From good comes good, from evil, evil. And of course, Galatians 6, verse 9 talks about reaping what you sow. 2 Corinthians 9:7, the same thing. And James 2, verse 13 also talks about the aspect that God does not always render evil for evil, because he shows mercy too. Okay, If I were going to give you an essay, I would say compare Calkin to Jesus Christ. I would say what form of religion would you be most comfortable with, or form of worship, a bhakti, karma, or jnana. But I won't give that to you. Okay, that ends Hinduism. Just turn in your papers on Thursday, although Thursday, just to let you know, we will have a change of schedule. Thursday morning at 8:30, instead of Mr. Thompson's smiling face, you will not have mine. You will have Dave Trabig. Mr. Trabig will talk to you for about an hour about vertical thought and get your help on that. So he's going to be here for an hour, 8:30 to 9:20. After he goes, Mr. Thompson will take the last half of his class. At 1:30 in the afternoon, he'll return to take my comparative religion time. Thank you for indulging me a little bit longer, and I appreciate it very much. Have a good rest of the day.